Major Plowman, Reel 4.
You're going to tell me some more about Sandhurst and the training at Sandhurst.
Yes, I really wanted to refer to the Commandant, because he made quite an impression on me. The first Saturday afternoon we were there, another captain and I were walking down the camp, and this car with a flag on drew up beside it. And at the wheel was a gentleman in an officer in a blue red band around his cap. And he opened the door and offered us a list, not much to our astonishment. And I got in the front with him, and my friend got in the back. And I said to him, is the Derbyshire Yeomanry as good a regiment as the Inns of Court? Which he did explode and said, of course it is. And I said, well, Colonel Bingley didn't think so. I didn't know really why I was so bold, but not normally. I wasn't normally very bold with senior officers at that stage. Anyway, so I knew him well, cracking chap. The funny thing was, that was at the beginning of this 4 or 5 months of Sandhurst. And he turned out to be my interviewing officer when I applied again to the Derbyshire Yeomanry. And he said, why do you want to join the Derbyshire Yeomanry? And of course, it was one of those obvious questions which floored me. And he said, I suppose it's because you don't feel you can go back to the Inns of Court having served in the ranks there, and you think the Derbyshire, the Yeomanry is the next best thing. I said, that's it, so yes. But he made a great impression on me because he very early addressed the college and told us about his army career. How up to that, he was a ninth lance, about up to 1936, 44 about, was playing parallel lines. That's the thing. He suddenly began to realize that we would soon have a war on our hands, and from then on he became a serious soldier. It was arranged for us, and a lot of talks by interesting people. For instance, we had a talk by a Pastor Lee, who was a scion of the Belgian royal family. Mm-hmm. He had escaped to the occupied France. All sorts of near misses. And then in Spain, difficult time traveling across Spain, finally getting to Lisbon and then being shipwrecked. And so we had much more attention was given to the broad picture when we began to understand things a lot better. Mr. Bells rang the first time in October, on a Sunday in October 1942, and I drove home.
Were you in touch with what was going on in the Middle East Theatre through?
Yeah, we had to get pretty well involved. The reason I chose one opted for the first Derbyshire Yeomanry was because they all went out of cars. And secondly, because Fritz North Africa was a bit different from the desert, I felt more confident if I, having been used to training in England, close country, rather than being in armored cars in the desert, having to use compasses and so on.
You said when you went out on Hartford Flats doing your tactical exercises, that you were driving in around in tanks. What sort of tanks were you using?
I think it could say that, but I can't remember.
Did you find it difficult to adapt from having been in armoured cars to being in tanks?
Not really, because even in the training room, with all that I said that we didn't get out much, we went into, got into turrets, dismounted turrets and that sort of thing. So, the turret of an armoured car and a tank, not so different, really. No, I didn't find any problem there. Funny thing was, when I was with the second in January, a short time before getting on the draft, I had much to do, so I used to take a grain carrier out on the Norwood Island and tried everything I might possibly do with a grain carrier, which gave me a bit more confidence with tractor. And then later on, we just had a week or so at Bobington before we actually then trained for Liverpool and the embarkation. And there I drove Crusaders and so forth. Crusader was a lovely vehicle to drive. But thank heaven I didn't have to go to war because we only had this pea shooter of a 2-pounder and had very thin armour. And it blew up very badly. The church was a great disappointment. He thought it was a great letdown after all the effort he made to get the 8th Armour Division out there. Put up such a poor share, well, they couldn't help it because they couldn't compete with the German tanks, with the Crusaders. Well, that's far away.
Up to what level were you doing the tactical training? You mentioned going out. Were you doing tactics up to troop level, or were you going up to squadron or regimental level or higher?
So I remember they had the troop or squadron. But possibly it was, it's all rather telescoped from the experience. I'd say probably up to regimental.
Do you remember doing sand table exercises at all?
Yes, yes we did. And tubes.
What sort of scale were you going up to with Toots? Were you?
I can't really remember. I remember this one I mentioned at the very much. I had a very clear idea of that because I think of it every time I go over to tips with on the A1. But I really can't remember the others. We had them in North Africa as well.
Roughly how much of your time, what proportion of your time was spent out on outdoor training while you were at the Sandhurst Octave?
Not a lot.
It was mainly indoors then?
Yeah.
What method of instruction did they use? Did they have you in formal lectures or did they use the syndicate discussion as a method?
I think there were all lectures as well, as far as I recall. And then you had to go when you, like that situation I described, you had a pretty clear idea of what you had to do and how to operate.
Did you have to do much written work as part of the training?
Yes, we did, quite a bit of written work, yes.
But what sort of things were you doing?
I'm afraid it escapes me now, yes. It was still all very intensive, you know. Very full day.
What about after the working day? What about the evenings? Were things organised?
I played squash for the first time, and that was a great, great help for me. And right when I played boxing, I got involved in a bit, but it never came. I didn't have to do anything. As I was explaining, I wasn't very keen on that. But I always played as much rugby as I could. A bit of a fanatic about rugby.
You mentioned.
Well, I said that Cal Brinkley came when I'm on the horse.
Mm.
We always had this early morning pre tea in the grounds. And we could have Pa Palmer would come trotting around with his squash blanket in his hand, and the pearl next later on in the flags. And if he saw some cadet bit idle about his press ups, he'd give him a whack with his squash blanket. Trot on to the squash court where two cadets would be detailed to play squash with the waiting point. He made a great impression on one. He wasn't a lofty figure as it were, who won every so major plays. He was about all the time. It was quite inspiring.
Who was instructing you? Was it again? Was it officers or was it NCOs who were instructing you?
Officers. The NCOs did the drill. Now, I suppose if we had any individual training like weapons, I think it would be NCOs. I can't remember much of that.
You mentioned that you had a selection board for the regiment you were going into, and that seems to have gone off well. How long did it take, the interview for selection?
Well, it was just Brigadier Palmer happened to be the interviewing officer, and I don't think it took very long, I think. Obviously, he must have been satisfied with my report. And he was the sort of man one related to quite easily. He's quite a personality. Although I was pretty nervous because I didn't. But I was very hopeful of being accepted. I wanted to be accepted very much, and I didn't want to put my foot in it.
And you wanted to go to the Derbyshire Yeomanry because of this officer who'd been in the Inns of Court with you beforehand?
No, not because of that. Because it was armoured guard. I'd done all my training had been in armoured cars.
Yes.
I would be more at home in those.
You hadn't. Oh, I see. I thought perhaps you'd had some idea.
You see, when the Derbyshire Yeomanry were, they went to Scotland crying to embarking for Torch. At the Inns of Court, were used as one of, officers went from the Inns of Court to the Derbyshire Yeomanry as a sort of reserve. And with great friend of mine, he, when he landed in North Africa, and the troops, the first officer killed in the regiment, he had to replace.
Battle casualty replacement.
The Inns of Court were plundered to reinforce the Yeomanry.
What was it like being in the Northamptonshires? How did they compare to other regiments you served with?
Well, I didn't enjoy it, really, although I had no reason to complain. It was just that in the mess, new officers weren't spoken to. And he felt a bit, didn't feel at ease. And it was difficult to get a rapport with any of the that were already serving. Because there were a few others who came. I say I'm no reason to complain because the squadron leader was a nice chap, a very capable man, Major Peck. And the colonel was perfectly okay, Colonel Cook, I think his name was. But just I didn't feel at home there. The contrast was so different when I went abroad. But I think all the regular regiments exercised this first when they were in England. They were all a bit stiff and starchy with the newcomers. They had to win their spouse a bit socially as well as otherwise. Whereas in abroad, when I was welcomed straight away as a member of the family.
What were the Northamptonshires doing when you joined them?
There was a court work, except they were tanks, the second of their journey. They were the 22nd or 23rd of the brigade. One of the regular regiments, the first and second of that year. I got compassionate leave. My grandfather died, and he didn't have to give me compassionate leave for the funeral. And I came back, and they were in the middle of an exercise. And I joined them at 10 o'clock at night, I think it was. All the tanks were moving all about in this wood. And I bed it down. Obviously that was an important exercise. I think there was maybe a brigade exercise. But I can't remember having any duties much apart from being all the officers or something like that. So I had a lot of spare time on my hands.
What could you do with it?
Just bring them. Whenever I could. Because I just waiting for the day when I got news of the draft, you see.
What sort of accommodation were you in at Ogbourne St George? Were you in a proper camp or a tented camp or billets?
It was an army camp. I can't remember much. I think the mess was, we had a regimental mess, which was a permanent building, I think. But we were probably in wooden huts, sleeping accommodation. It wasn't like Paragon, a big proper barracks, from what I remember, but I can't know much about it. We were just outside the village. The training ground was all. So you went down to the area of the camp, you went up in the downs. It's very good training out, especially with the tracks.
Were they doing a lot of exercises?
Well, I don't think so, because they did, as I say, they did this one, which it was in the late January. Grandfather died in the January. Which was quite a serious exercise. But otherwise, when I was out on with his game carry, I was near on my own, so they must have been doing a lot of classroom work.
How much warning did you get that you were going on a draft?
I can't remember. I was sent to Bobbington. I had a few days at Bobbington.
What were they doing with you there?
We were just there.
Just waiting.
Yeah. Never allowed to. I had the opportunity to go and try out the Crusader tank. I remember that very well. And there were a lot of tanks there that one hadn't had the opportunity of seeing at training, which burned down with very few. I think they could have burned down the two on them, the children or two, but well, you were lucky to get inside them. It's very difficult. The paucity of equipment, generally, the lack of live ammunition itself was difficult to credit that. Compared with when one went to North Africa, and there was plenty of everything.
How do you?
And then you saw the American car.
That's a different world altogether.
Yes, exactly. I mean, they had showers, set-ups and so on, everything. Yeah.
How did you get out to North Africa?
We seemed to get a very long way across the Atlantic in the westerly direction. And so I turned out to be a rather poor sailor. I hated it. And we had what was called boat crew, which swims soon after breakfast. And all it consisted of was a lining the side out on this deck, gazing out to sea and whiling away for 2 or 3 hours, presumably, so the ratings could make sure our quarters were in order, and we were out of the way. I think in the afternoon we would do a bit of deck tennis and that sort of thing. Conditions weren't very good for the men. We actually were the said to be the first convoy into Algiers that hadn't been bombed. It was a thrill passing a Ceuta just beyond Gibraltar. We were passing the night and we were opposite Gibraltar, and then we saw Ceuta and all lit up, and then Tangier on the other side. Otherwise, it was a deadly dull voyage, mercifully. Mm-hmm. I got a joint because I was ordered to be a baggage officer. And so instead of marching out for 2 or 3 miles to measure on Calais with a full marching order, I'd arrived, I was in charge of this transport. There were 3 of us going out to join the WCOMA, and I was out of myself, newly commissioned it. And, the captain, Hugh Waller, who had been in pre-war territorial with Dalmatian Germany, and who had been at Sandhurst as a wireless instructor, and probably wanted to go back and join the regiment and fly. Anyway, he went to the OC draft Here's a Canadian. He said, you could find him very inexperienced officer to be in charge of the baggage. I think I ought to go along with him just to see that he got the right as well. And then.
What were your first impressions of Algeria when you arrived?
Well, Algeria City, I didn't see much of it. It was one of the times where I was in the UN. Well, I came to the United States in trucks. That was in March, true. I took to the country to this little place, Maison Cavalli, which was near the railhead. I mean, it's typical colonial French, well, the best colonial French city I've seen, but, which obviously had the great French influence on the architecture. I didn't see anything of the Casbah or anything, but I met others who were going to the Casbah later. The train journey was quite incredible. We were in train to clear that up and make it get away. And we, the officers, had these two dirty carriages in front. And the men were in the metal trucks. Oh, eight horses, 40 men. And for 5 days we were on this train. It was the most infuriating journey because it would travel on the back 12 miles an hour, sometimes getting up to 20. And it would stop for no reason. And then we'd stop at a station and think we'd got time to stretch our legs, and suddenly it'd be moving, and it would rush back to catch it for another time, behind the there, leaving the train, and it would be there 40 minutes. We were able to get some sort of brew up on the little platform between these two carriages. Well, the eggs were the great. They would stop being able to buy eggs. Every hour of children would devour enough offering these eggs. And we got to one stage. We thought we must have got an American driver, because we suddenly started the cars were running. These miles would be about 30 or 40 miles an hour. So that we made a bit of progress that day. And then I only heard about this afterwards. But when we got to the end of the journey, we we hadn't got any sergeants. They'd all been in one of these trucks. And we heard afterwards that there was one shunting in Constantine in the night. And apparently they woke up in the morning, looked out on a beautiful sunny morning, and either side of them were black faces of Senegalese troops, and they were obviously heading south. So they'd been moved on to the long train. And they only got to the front after it was all over. So you can imagine, it really was great Carly's army up to there. But when we got off the train, things were very well organized. And I must say, I had, although the first army was